Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Isabella Garrido, Jaya Kumar, and Abyaz Karim. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. In a decisive move to bolster healthcare access at their Tuesday meeting, Council unanimously approved an additional $600,000 to continue the city's successful family physician recruitment program. Since its inception in 2022, the recruitment program has succeeded in bringing 25 family doctors to Kingston, 17 replacing retiring physicians and 8 new to the area. The city has invested $3 million in this initiative. The impact of recruitment efforts has been significant, as the new doctors are now providing care for approximately 8,100 residents who previously did not have a family doctor. Additionally, the recruitment of replacement physicians has prevented around 14,500 patients from losing access to care. The recruitment program, along with other initiatives like the new geographic rostering of patients through health homes and expansion of existing clinics, have made significant headway in ensuring all Kingston residents are attached to primary care. According to data in the report presented to Council by Craig Desjardins, Director of Strategy, Innovation and Partnerships with the City, estimates using data from the Ministry of Health currently suggest that fewer than 9,000 residents in Kingston lack a primary care provider. Discussions between the City and the local Ontario Health team were optimistic, projecting that all unattached patients will be rostered by the end of 2025. Desjardins spoke to these ambitious targets for 2025 and some of the immediate next steps.
Part of the opportunity is related to the completion of the Queen Mary, the Midtown Clinic, the new Midtown Clinic, hopefully by January of 2026. It may leak into early 2026. But again, the target is to have everybody rostered. One of the things that we'll be doing, I think within the next 2 months, is meeting with Jane Philpott, who now oversees the $1.8 billion in provincial funding for the expansion of the health home model, is to secure, actually I know several councillors are interested in the West End, is to possibly seek funding for a new clinic in the West End to support the growing populations there.
According to Desjardins, following this goal, focus will shift towards sustaining care, particularly in replacing retiring physicians. This strategic shift is expected to alleviate financial and staffing demands on the city. Councillors readily approved the extra $600,000 boost in funding. Councillor Don Amos had the following comment.
This is fantastic news for Kingston residents. We're definitely heading in the right direction, and this only bodes well for us as a healthy community. So the stronger we are healthy-wise as a community, the more we can do as a city.
Councillor Brandon Tozo also stressed the importance of registering for Healthcare Connect, the primary method the city has been using to connect patients.
The message I just want to give, I don't really have a question, I just have a message for the community. Sign up with Healthcare Connect. That's one thing I came across in this report. If you are currently unattached with a doctor and not on a wait list, we need to get you on it to get you rostered with a doctor. So please sign up with Healthcare Connect. It's online and you can also call.
With continued investment, Kingston is on track to not only address the immediate healthcare needs of its residents, but also build a sustainable system for the future. At their April 1st meeting, Council unanimously decided not to move forward with implementing a vacant home tax following a recommendation from city staff. Vacant homes exacerbate the limited housing inventory, contributing to rising prices and affordability challenges. A vacant home tax would impose fees on property owners of deemed vacant homes, with the goal of addressing these issues. Anne Lindsay with Public Sector Advisory Services at KPMG Canada briefed Council on the feasibility of the program. She described the reasoning behind implementing a vacant home tax.
Really, the two main drivers of a vacant home tax are the objectives to increase the housing supply and affordability. A vacant home tax targets residential properties that are unoccupied for an extended period of time. And that financial penalty placed on owners is meant to incentivize the owners to sell or rent those underutilized homes. And that would result in an increase in the overall housing supply by pushing those underutilized properties back onto the market. The other driver is to generate tax revenue, typically dedicated to affordability initiatives. So tax revenue generated from a vacant home tax could be reinvested into affordable housing initiatives, rental assistance programs, and homelessness prevention. But it is important to note that a vacant home tax should really be viewed as a temporary measure to address an immediate need of housing availability rather than a long-term revenue source. The long-term goal of the tax is really to motivate change in the behavior of property owners and eventually eliminate the need for the tax in the future when all homes are occupied.
Other Ontario municipalities have put similar taxes in place, including Ottawa, Toronto, Hamilton, Windsor, and Sault Ste. Marie. However, the tax is still relatively new to the province.
Other than Vancouver, who's had a vacant home tax since 2017, it is very new in Ontario. So Toronto was the first to implement in 2022. So we're really only 3 years into seeing what is happening in the Ontario market. But
the city of Kingston originally started considering the tax in 2023. Lindsay's briefing outlined the implementation would either require property owners to self-declare their property as vacant, or the city would act on complaints from other people. The program would require substantial administrative resources to enforce compliance, including annual property status declarations from owners. The initial setup for a self-declaration-based system would cost between $535,000 and $995,000, with annual operational costs projected to be $250,000. A complaint-based system would be less expensive, requiring about $107,000 to set up and $77,000 annually to maintain. While the tax could theoretically generate revenue for affordable housing initiatives, the potential for tangible change in behavior among property owners remains uncertain. Lindsay also highlighted that annually only 2 to 7 additional properties might be put on the market as a result of the tax. The hefty costs and uncertainty surrounding the effectiveness of the program raised eyebrows amongst councillors, and ultimately led to the staff recommendation not to move forward. Kingston's circumstances have also changed significantly since this investigation began in 2023. While Kingston's vacancy rate in 2023 was only 0.8%, giving cause for the city to motivate property owners to sell unoccupied homes or make them available to be rented, Kingston's current vacancy rate is now 2.9%, which is above the provincial average of 2.7%. Councillor Don Amos asked Lindsay about how this impacts the recommendation.
In your opinion, is the 2.9% Kingston vacancy rate heading and trending in the right direction that potentially this vacancy tax is not really justified in moving forward with?
So typically CMHC standards is that a 3% vacancy rate is considered healthy for communities. So my recommendation would align with CMHC's determination that an approximate 3% vacancy rate would be a healthy vacancy rate for the community.
Overall, it was unanimously agreed by council that the costs and uncertainties would outweigh the potential effectiveness of a vacant home tax. As Kingston continues to navigate its housing challenges, the city plans to explore alternative strategies that may prove more effective in increasing availability for affordable housing in the community. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Good evening, folks. I'm Abiyaz from CFRC News, and you're listening to our segment Campus Corner. Here we bring you the latest updates from Queen's Campus. Last Friday, 4th April 2025, the Queen's University Upperhead Diverse Coalition, commonly known as QADT, and Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, commonly known as SPHR, held a press conference in response to the Queen's University's Responsible Investment Review Committee's decision not to divest from companies linked to human rights concerns in Palestine. Now we are taking you to the press conference to hear directly from the organizers.
We are gathered here to speak to you about the university's shameful decision not to divest from death and genocide. While we gather outside of the building that we have reclaimed as Reams Hall, we want to acknowledge that the land that Queen's University is on is the traditional territory of many Indigenous nations. The area known as Kararokwe has been taken care of by the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg nations. It is now home to many First Nation and Métis communities. This territory is subject of the Dish With One Spoon Wampum Belt Covenant, an agreement to peaceably share and care for the Great Lakes region. Yet, as we all know, there is nothing peaceful whatsoever about settler colonialism, which remains hell-bent on eliminating and replacing indigenous life on this land and elsewhere. The recommendation report by the Review Committee for Responsible Investing, ironically, that we are here to discuss today, also ironically started with a land acknowledgement. However, after reading the committee's remarks, the inclusion of a land acknowledgement in the report serves as a token gesture that only reinforces Queen's performative stance on justice and indigeneity. How out of touch did the committee have to be to recognize Queens as being situated on colonized land, but not recognize Queen's complicity in the colonization of Palestine? The constant dispossession and oppression of Palestinians and the continuing demolition of their homes and annexation of their lands. Palestinians are indigenous to Palestine. Desmond Tutu, a South African bishop known for his human rights and anti-apartheid activism, said, quote, "If you are neutral in situations of injustice, you have chosen the side of the oppressor," end quote. It took 9 whole years for Queen's University to divest from apartheid in South Africa. And thus, we will also continue to push for divestment from Israeli settler colonialism and apartheid, no matter how long it takes. We want to remind everyone listening that only a few days after Queen's University released its decision not to divest from companies facilitating Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories, Israel broke the ceasefire and resumed the genocide in Gaza, with daily massacres occurring since. By the end of 2023, Queen's University's pooled endowment funds, the PEF, and pooled investment funds, the PIF, had a combined value of $222 million invested in companies considered to be complicit in the death and destruction of Palestine. We reiterate, Queen's University is not a neutral party here. Its investments are one side of an ongoing genocide. The purpose of today's Queen's University Apartheid Divest Coalition's press conference is to inform our community that Queen's University students, faculty, staff, and alumni reject the Responsible Investing Committee's decision. We reject their decision to refrain divesting from Israeli apartheid and the genocide of the Palestinian people. The Responsible Investing Committee has yet to demonstrate its capacity as a decision-making body appointed by the university to engage in good faith with this special request made by Quad. This request was made under procedure number 2 of the Responsible Investing Policy, requesting Queen's University to divest from companies facilitating Israel's illegal occupation of the occupied Palestinian territories and companies profiting from Israeli apartheid and genocide.
That was a segment from last Friday's press conference hosted by QADT and SPHR, responding to Queen's University's Responsible Investing Review Committee's decision. We will continue to follow the story and bring you updates as they develop. And that's a wrap for today. I'm Abiyaz from CFRC News, and you are listening to our segment, Campus Corner. Stay tuned for more updates. Over to Isabella for sports after.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Wednesday, April 9th, daytime high of 3 degrees and it will be sunny, dropping down to a crisp and cool minus 8 overnight. Thursday, April 10th, we're going to see a daytime high of 6 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, dropping down to 0 overnight with a 30% chance of precipitation. Friday, April 11th, a little bit warmer, closer to what we saw over the weekend, with a daytime high of 8 degrees and it will be cloudy, staying above 0 at 1 degree overnight. Saturday, April 12th, we're going to see a daytime high of 9 degrees, so staying in that consistent temperature range, and it will be cloudy, dropping down to 0 overnight. Sunday, April 13th, the first double-digit day of the week, daytime high of 10 degrees, dropping down to 3 overnight, and moving into the start of next week, Monday, April 14th, we're going to see a daytime high of 13, but there will be a 50% chance of precipitation, and it will be dropping down to 5 degrees overnight. This is Jesse Bell with the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week. Reminder that reduced load restrictions are in effect for Kingston as of March 1st. Heavy trucks and loads are restricted on city roads where posted. These restrictions help reduce the damage to roads in the spring. A complete list of roads with restrictions can be found in the Traffic Bylaw section of the City of Kingston website. Here are your road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Victoria Street, between Union and Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Queen Street from Wellington Street to King is closed for the rerouting of hydro conduits by a Utilities Kingston contractor. Queen Street from Ontario to King Street East is closed for the dismantling and removal of the tower crane at 18 Queen Street, weather permitting. Berry Street from Queen to Colborne is closed for the demobilization of equipment from the 283 Queen Street site. The Hanson Memorial Parking Structure Restoration Project is underway. The work will take place throughout all levels of the building and will include efforts such as routine structural maintenance, repainting, replacement of waterproofing materials, and upgrades to the building's mechanical and electrical systems. The work is set to conclude in July of 2025. Here are some other delays you should be aware of. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford. Expect delays beginning April 7th while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abidon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users and accommodate increased traffic from the Wabin Crossing. Victoria Street and Earl Street to Union and Johnson. Expect delays beginning April 7th while a contractor mobilizes to start work on the second phase of reconstruction for sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Hello, I'm Henry, CFRC intern from the Queen's Department of History. Here's today's concert and events calendar. On Wednesday, One Eye Jats will host Board Game Night starting at 7. Both Something in the Water and Daft Brewing will host their free weekly trivia nights, both starting at 7 p.m. Folks can also head down to Musiki, which is hosting its weekly life drawing event. Don't forget to bring your own art supplies and $5 to participate in uninstructed life drawing. Thursday night will be the opening night for the Queen's Musical Theatre Club's sold-out run of Heather's the Musical at the Grand Theatre. This evening's performance starts at 7:30, with further performances continuing through the week up until the 17th. Also on Thursday, Daft will be hosting Drag Bingo from 7:30 to 10. The Out in Front Weekly Run Group will be hosting its usual weekly public run this Thursday, starting downtown at 6:15 p.m. in front of Runner's Choice. All people are invited regardless of ability, sex, sexual orientation, or gender identity. Folks can also head down to the Kingston Public Market, which is open from 8:30 to 4 p.m. in Springer Market Square. On Friday, the Grand Theater, as part of their Grand Onstage series, will be presenting Africa en Cirque. This performance begins at 7:30 p.m. and has tickets available on the Grand's website for between $29.50 and $44.50. Also on Friday, the Spiral will be hosting the Girls' Night Out Improv Comedy Night featuring comedians Elvira Kurt, Janine Profeta, Diane Francis, and Karen Parker starting at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available for $55.25 on the Kingston Grand's website. The Buckle and Daft Ruin will also be hosting their weekly free karaoke nights, doors open at 9. Next up, on Saturday, folks can head over to the Tet Center for their botanical market, which runs from 10 to 3 p.m. Folks can also head down to participate in Runner's Choice East End Run Group at 7:50 a.m. at the K-Next Kingston Supermart, 29 Niagara Park. Also on Saturday, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. On Sunday morning, the Runner's Choice Lawn Run starts downtown outside their store at 8:20 a.m. All ages and paces are welcome. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 1 p.m. at Memorial Center. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Again, I'm Henry, CFRC intern for the Department of History. We're continuing with today's concert and events calendar. For concerts, on Wednesday, Whiskey Smoke will be playing at the Buckle from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. Hotel Wolf Island will be holding its open mic night, hosted by Mike Rapkins, from 8:30 to 11:30. Also on Wednesday, Frank Ryan will be playing at Musiki from 8 to 11 p.m. On Thursday, the Toucan will be featuring three up-and-coming bands coming out of Queens, Purple Dye, Wait 'Em Out, and this evening's headliners, Last Call. Music starts at 9:30, goes till 1, and there is no cover charge. Also on Thursday, Trailer Swift Band will be playing at the Buckle from 8 to 11. Next up, on Friday, Raoul and the Big Time will be playing at the RCHA from 8 to 11 p.m. Tickets for this performance are going for around $28 and are available online on Eventbrite. The Almonte-based rock and roll group Kentucky will be playing at Tiernanod from 7 to 9 p.m. Also on Friday, ESMO, Elizabeth Shepherd, and Michael Occhipinti will be playing at Hotel Wolf Island from 7:30 to 9:30. Tickets for this evening's performance are available for $25 on Hotel Wolf Island's website. The Toucan also has three bands lined up for Friday night, with the Meringues, Dumb Crush, and Desert Island Big Band playing from 10:30 to 2 a.m. On Saturday, the Shitty Beatles will be performing at the Broom Factory, with their show starting at 7:30. Tickets are available for around $20 on Ticketscene. Also on Saturday, Ryan Zig and the Zeds will be playing a free gig at the Buckle from 9 to 12:30. Folks can also catch the band Groove Infused at Tiernanog from 9 to 12. Also, folks can head to the Toucan to catch their three-band lineup, with bands Wygo, Isa Beister, and the Brightsides playing Saturday evening from 10:30 to 2 a.m. Also on Saturday, the Canadian children's music duo Nick Adams, Splash, and Taze Livett, Boots, will be performing at the Isabel Bader Center from 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. Tickets for this event are currently going for $20 and are available on the Isabel's website. The Kingston Grand Theatre will additionally be hosting the Kingston Symphony for this year's run of their Symphonic Speedruns concert, featuring world-class speedrunners from Cuphead and Celeste, accompanied by a live video game concert. This performance goes from 7:30 to 9 p.m., with tickets available for between $10 and $52 on the Kingston Grabs website or in person at the Grand Theatre. On Sunday afternoon, Neil Carter will be performing Collection of Classics at Spearhead Brewery from 2 to 5, and later on, Savannah Shea will be playing at Musiki from 4:30 to 6:30. Have a concert you would like to add to our online and on-air concert calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What Will I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.